Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to DNF, an F1 podcast that, you know, we try to keep it relatively, like, what would you say, Jessica Smetana, my co-host? Information allergic?
I would say information light.
Yes.
Fun heavy, though.
We try to hit the balance of, do you know how smart you have to be this dumb? That's really... That's really where I want to take it. I'm not speaking for you there, but...
No, that's fine. You can speak for me.
Exactly. This is a special day because we have a guest, Elizabeth Blackstock of Jalopnik.com, the finest automotive website on the planet for, like, I don't know, 15 years running. Elizabeth wrote a piece this week that we are going to discuss about what a mess the Miami Grand Prix was to attend in person last year, and whether we're going to get a repeat of that. I would be irresponsible, though, if we did not go back and discuss a little bit of the week that was in Formula One, including Esteban Ocon almost mowing down an entire row of photographers who were straying across pit lane in the Parc Ferme. Is there an accent on that, by the way?
Ferme.
Is it Ferme? Yeah. Is there an accent?
Yeah. I think there's a... I don't remember what...
Is it an accent grave or an accent acute?
Grave.
Grave. Okay, so it is
50-50 guess.
That's good.
The one that points out.
Yeah.
The.
Yeah, is it the alligator going this way or the alligator going that way?
Oh my God. Call my French teacher. She'll know.
Yes. You're the expert since you do, on the Levitard show, occasionally deliver the 1 minute of F1 coverage that show provides. The 1 minute worth listening to of the entire show, dare I say. Let's just throw that out there.
Harsh,
the
one but fair.
Actual value. But we're going to discuss Baku as well. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us. I wanted to just ask, first of all, everyone takes something different away from every single F1 race. This was kind of a snoozer, but what was the one storyline that you looked at and you said, hey, I want to talk more about that. That was more significant than people thought. That was more interesting than people noticed.
I think actually the results of that race between the sprint race that we had and the actual race with Checo Perez winning both, I think we're going to have to look back at that race in Baku and say that was a turning point in the season when we get to the end of the year. Like, it was a boring race. I did not enjoy waking up at 6 a.m. to watch that. But also Checo just sweeping the weekend, I think, is going to end up becoming something that is much bigger, and we keep following that storyline through the end of the season.
So what do you attribute that to? Is it Max having like a little bit of issues driving the car the way he wants to drive it? Is it Checo being a master at these types of circuits? Why did he come away with all the success this weekend?
I think we have a little bit of both of those things, but Verstappen seems to have like a lot going on in his head right now. There were so many rumors all week of like him talking about how much he wants to leave the series, and he has other business interests that he could go pursue instead of F1. I think he's a little bit in his own head. You could kind of see that when he got spicy with George Russell after the sprint race. So I think he's just kind of like feeling the tension, and Checo is just there. Checo's been through this before. He knows how to be a number two driver. He has experience. Like, he's ready to roll. And he's doing good. He's doing well. Verstappen is just, he's having a rough spot. I think he's going to come back from it. He is unfortunately a great driver, but Checo's got something going on right now.
Elizabeth, is this Max Verstappen entering his I'm just going to go to law school phase?
I definitely think it is. Yeah. It's weird to say because he's so young and he still has so much potential, but it seems like he's almost checked out a little bit and just doesn't seem to enjoy like what F1 is right now, which is kind of funny because F1 is Red Bull right now.
That is spot on. So as a discerning Formula One journalist, one of the only on this podcast, when you are seeing rumors like that, like I found that Formula One is it's difficult to parse through rumors when they're coming from so many sources because it's an mm-hmm. international sport. And like Spencer and I do a lot of, you know, college football stuff. And I think we have like the inherent knowledge of what's real, what's BS. But how do you parse through, and when you hear like those Max Verstappen rumors, or even like this Fernando Alonso Taylor Swift rumor now that was like the story of the weekend for yeah. all the Aston Martin press that was that happened. How do you parse through and actually kind of determine where that's coming from and what's real?
I think most of it is coming like you have to read the direct quotes that people are giving. So like the Fernando Alonso stuff, that's just silly. That was fully third-party sources. Like, I'm having a great time making memes about it, but that's like the extent, I think, of the legitimacy we're going to see there. With the Max Verstappen stuff, like, he is actively saying words that are, you know, he's conveying that he's not happy. I don't think he's actually going to leave. Like, Ferrari has said the exact same thing Max Verstappen said, like, verbatim for 45 years, like, they're always threatening to leave the sport. So I don't think we're actually going to see it happen, but I think that what it conveys more is like that psychological aspect that is underlying why he's making those statements. Like, you don't just go to the press and say that kind of stuff unless you're trying to force someone's hand. And I think he's a little displeased with the fact that Sergio Perez has been a force to reckon with this season. And even last season, we saw a lot of that happening as well. He's just not like the de facto number one anymore. Like, he's kind of having to make a little bit of room for Checo. And I think that's where his frustration's coming from.
So one of the new-ish things this weekend that was around the last few seasons was this sprint race format, the new iteration, which is qualifying for Sunday on Friday, the sprint race qualifying on Saturday morning for US watchers. What was your takeaway from all of that? How many drivers and team principals hated it? Do fans actually like it? And what did you enjoy about it, if anything?
You don't have to like any of
it. I listened to another Formula One podcast that all five panelists were just complaining about it for like an hour. So that's fair.
The one thing I did like about it was that qualifying for the sprint race is its own thing this year. I think that's good. Last year, it was so confusing trying to figure that out. Not that they've made it any easier to parse out this year, unfortunately. It's still a quagmire of just nonsense that's going on. I'm not a big sprint race person anyway. I understand the, like, we want to give you more bang for your buck and more racing for the weekend, but I just don't care. Like, a sprint race is the most disinteresting part of a Formula One race. Like, the bit before the pit stop, after the pit stop is generally when things are interesting, so I've not been a big fan of it. I just also think that this like Saturday doesn't actually matter really at all toward Sunday is just weird to me. Like, it's so weird to know that I'm going to be at the US Grand Prix this year and like Saturday has nothing related to what we're going to be doing on Sunday. It's just kind of like clunked in the middle. And I've seen a lot of fans being upset about that kind of thing where it's like, if you're going to miss a day at the track, you're going to miss Friday because you probably have to work. So you're missing qualifying for the race, which is frustrating. I personally would probably switch the sprint shootout and the actual qualifying, so that qualifying is still on Saturday. But Mr. Formula One does not like my ideas and has not hired me yet. So I don't think that's going to happen.
Just sending an email to Mr. Formula One at MrFormulaOne.com.
I feel like George Russell is IBM. Mr. Formula One. If we were like a Mr. Formula One pageant, you would win.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 100%.
We did have, though, one thing I wanted to talk about. George Russell getting his elbows out again, becoming Dark George. My favorite evolving storyline of the 2023 season is George Russell not being the best lad anymore, but becoming the dark lad, becoming the one who is getting his elbows out, asserting himself more, and cut off Max Verstappen. Another thing that made Max Verstappen, this is a very long list of things that make Max Verstappen unhappy, right? But one of them is someone actually doing to him what he does to everybody else, which is getting his elbows out and passing him on a corner. Does that matter at all, or is that just, you know, more stunt work that we can talk about after the race?
I think, like, obviously stunt work is, it's freaking cool to see that, but that, I think that is starting to, like, wear away on Max Verstappen. He's gotten away with a lot of stuff for a really long time. I started out not liking him. I still don't really, because Max replaced my favorite driver back in 2014. In 2015, so I was not stoked about that, and I remain not stoked. But like, Red Bull has kind of like paved a path for him, so Max Verstappen has just kind of been able to like walk freely with no interference or obstacles. So yeah, he's kind of gotten away with a lot of stuff. I think he's realizing he can't anymore, and that's starting to really bother him. And the George Russell thing was absolutely part of that. Someone did to him what he has done to others, and he was not stoked.
So we put out a call for questions. We usually answer a lot of fan questions on the show. And one of the recurring themes is what the hell's going on with Valtteri Bottas this year. Can you enlighten us on what why he is having the season he's having?
I think he has kind of checked out from the whole competitive thing, and he's just here for the vibes now. Kimi Raikkonen did something extremely similar when he went from Ferrari and then went into Alfa Romeo as well. Like, Kimi Raikkonen was just there to have fun. He was there to collect a paycheck, race around the world, and have a great time. I'm pretty certain that's what Valtteri's doing. He's like, he can have his mullet and his little mustache. He can have all of his new alcohol sponsorships. And he can just have a great time and still, like, get a good paycheck to do not really anything. Like, I would absolutely be a Formula One driver at the back of the field for that exact reason. So I think that is, like, he's just checked out. He's just here to have fun. And
we need to make that happen.
I know.
Let's get you in the Alfa Romeo for the rest of the season.
Please.
Mr. F1 about that in the sprint race format.
Yeah, Valtteri would be on board with this. He has yet to pull off something as elaborate and a caper as diabolical as his compatriot Kimi Raikkonen, who, when racing for Lotus, managed to get a 50,000 euro guarantee for every point he scored. Lotus did not believe he would score more than a couple of points, and due to scoring 390 points in 2 years with Lotus, he nearly bankrupted the team by himself. The bar is really high,
is
what I am saying, in terms of phoning it in and capers. Until you end up in the truck series, you are no Kimi Raikkonen, Valtteri. Until you end up in the NASCAR truck series.
Excuse me, kitty. Sorry. Yeah, my cat likes to come say hello. There's a slider.
Aww. Hi, slider.
I have three.
Jessica, are we ready to talk about Miami, your favorite city in the world?
Can we talk about the tragic incident that almost was before we move on to Miami?
Yes.
Because there have been a number of these instances in the last, probably in the last forever, where Formula One or the FIA or race organizers, whoever is to be blamed, have maybe done something or not done something that has led to a near catastrophic incident. So this weekend it was Esteban Ocon who, smartly, the Sky Sports broadcast realized had not pitted in the race and there was only one lap to go, so he would be coming into the pit lane, and Ted Kravitz, the pit lane reporter, was like, they are already setting up the barricade in the pit lane, and the team, Red Bull's team, had come on to the pit wall to celebrate already, but we're pretty sure he's going to come in because he has to pit at least once. So he nearly ran into a whole lot of people and luckily hit his brakes in time where he didn't. But why do these things keep happening, and how do we stop them from happening?
I think the thing that you'll find with almost all motorsport everywhere forever is that no one does anything. No rule exists until someone has raised that issue and made it like, oh, we have to deal with something like this. So head protection in the cars, which is why we have the halos now, was not an issue until we had a driver die because of a head injury. At that point, it was like, here's how we fix this. This is something that, like, I absolutely think we're going to see immediately change, that they're going to close off the pit lane until the race has ended. But it, like, it's never been an issue before. No one has pitted on the last lap and caused that kind of chaos. So it wasn't a thing that they had to worry about. And that's pretty much the same for every series or across the planet. Neck protection was not a thing in NASCAR until Dale Earnhardt died. Sometimes it takes a tragedy. Sometimes it just takes a misstep like we saw over this weekend. And I'm hoping, I believe they've already, like, the FIA has met about this and, like, has some strategies for Miami in place, which is, it's good to see the like rapid action on that one. But yeah, that was actually legitimately terrifying. I think sometimes we can forget how scary this can be. Like, race car is not always hunky-dory. That woke me right up. I did not like to see his onboard of that. That was not fun.
Well, you have covered races before. Mm-hmm. You have been down in Parc Fermé with the accident going this way.
Yeah.
That is not an area where anyone is just wandering around with their nose in the air, not paying attention. That is an area where, especially if you are somebody who is not essential personnel, you are on your toes just to not be in the way, much less to get close to the pit wall. It was boggling to me to see that just because everyone takes that area so seriously, because it is so closed off and it's so controlled.
They do take it seriously, but at the same time, they're, is a lot of entitlement that comes into play when it comes to, like, I'm getting the photo, I'm getting the story. Mm-hmm. I am a short gal, so I've been, like, elbowed out of the way by other journalists before just because I'm not an intimidating presence. A lot of those people are out there and they're staking their claim and saying, I am here and nothing is going to make me move. And I think that's part of why you kind of get those blinders on, where it is this, like, I'm going to stand here and I'm going to be here first and I'm going to do these things that, like, aren't really okay, but are not explicitly banned just because I'm getting there first. And I'm pretty sure, like, that's what it was. There were a lot of people in their photo vests and a lot of Red Bull crew members out there. Obviously, they're there to celebrate, but they're also there to, like, they want to be the person close to the fence. It's like showing up to a concert early. You want to be front row. And so until someone says, like, you literally can't do that anymore, they would continue to do that.
That's a good point about, like, the access and being cutthroat with access, because I think that's the same in a lot of sports, but a lot of sports aren't as, like, physically dangerous to journalists and reporters as Formula One. But I also wonder, now that Formula One has grown, at, like, exponentially in the last few years, if there's more reporters and media covering events that aren't, you know, haven't been around for an incident like that, and maybe are not, you don't have their heads on a swivel quite as much. But the race was in Azerbaijan. That would be something that I would expect to see in Miami, where I was wandering around the pit lane last year, like, I'm in the pit lane. Oh my God. And then I like scurried away. But, like, those are both really good points that I've also wondered about. So yes, Spencer, now we can move on to Miami. Where should we begin? We should talk, I think, first about the story that you wrote in Jalopnik, which was titled Formula One's Race Strategy in America Isn't Convincing Fans to Stick Around. And you spoke to some fans who went to the Miami race last year. What was the overall takeaway from their experience there?
Pretty much everyone I spoke to felt that the race, what they paid for the race, was not equal to the experience that they had there. That was pretty much, like, the big thing I wanted to ask people about, because I went to that event, I covered it as media, and I was a guest of Red Bull too. So I wasn't paying out of pocket to be there, but I still felt extremely out of place. I think, like, Formula One is very elite. I grew up white trash. Like, I've never been on that same level.
What's up?
Exactly. So, like, but that race was the first time I actively felt like I didn't belong. It was, like, a place to see and be seen. I was in my, like, cute little Target dress, and it's like people out here are wearing, like, their bag costs more than my car.
It felt Kentucky Derby-esque with like the costuming happening, I think.
It did.
And it was that, and I wanted to ask, that was to me a different vibe than even the Austin race.
Yes.
That the Austin race very much has a folks. Like there are actual folks who are at the Austin race. That was not the vibe in Miami.
No. So Miami, I believe, really was like, it was a place to see and be seen. And so the people I spoke to were, I talked to some people who were like longtime F1 fans who had been going to races all over the world and felt like they were just super disappointed by the experience they had in Miami. It's a parking lot. You really can't do anything in terms of the fan experience there, but it was still just like, I spent $8,000 and for what? To like see a little corner of the track, not have any shade. And also they ran out of water for people. So like, what are you supposed to do? And I also talked to people who are sports fans in the United States, but had just gotten into F1. So it was really fascinating to hear their experiences and their comparisons of you walk into a Formula One race and you're just kind of stuck there for the whole day. You can't leave. You can't go to the bar. You can't really do anything. You're just at the track trying to find shade with all of these other people trying to do the same thing. And everyone was just very disappointed. It was a lot of it was just like, yeah, I would never come back here again. Like I'd come back if it was free and someone was paying for me, but I'm not going to go spend my own money on that kind of thing, which entirely reasonable.
They are switching up the paddock this year, I think, maybe in response to this not being enough of an event or just trying to do something interesting. The media paddock is going to be in the stadium itself on the turf that the Dolphins play on. So fans will be able to buy tickets to just what, like part of, as part of their general package, they will be able to watch all of that if they want. So, which is interesting to me because that's selling the fishbowl. It's like we complained, okay, there's a fishbowl effect. It's only made for these people. And the response was, we'll sell tickets to the fishbowl. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah, that's very much Formula One. If we can market it, we will market it. And we will charge you $500 at least for the pleasure.
Also, worth shouting out, a lot of like the people you talked to mentioned how hot it was and how there was so little respite from the heat. And like you were in the media area. I saw Spencer there. I was there for a little bit. We at least had like an air-conditioned room we could go to if we were about to pass out from heat exhaustion. But of course, it's May in Miami, and the forecast right now is a high of 86 every day with no clouds, just straight sunshine. So there's almost that aspect of it, which is not something Formula One can even fix because it's an outdoor event where, like you said, it's in a parking lot. It's hot, it's sticky, and there's nowhere to go because you're out in the middle of Miami Gardens, you know, without access to come and go as you please. So there are aspects of it that like maybe the location is not the greatest. And then you build all these other things on top of it, like very expensive hospitality suites that most fans can't afford that make the issue even more difficult. So I did enjoy the quote of the person you interviewed who said that they were like, Joe Exotic, I'm never going to be able to financially recover from this.
Yeah. It was so funny.
That does bring us to one of our listener questions, which is that, so I will not be at the Miami Grand Prix this weekend because I'm going to my friend's wedding, but what race would make the best bachelorette weekend? Because I think we can rule out Miami just from an expense point of view.
I was going to say, like, Miami from the fun part, absolutely. Miami from the money part, do not even bother. If you want to do, like, a fun bachelorette weekend, you're probably going to want to go to Europe. You can do it for cheaper than you can do any race here in America. I haven't been to all of the races in Europe, so I can't speak to like what would be the best, but the Hungarian Grand Prix is close enough to town that you can commute in. And I believe it's the same case with Monza. So if you want to get lit in Italy with all of the Ferrari fans, go to Monza.
Thoughts on Montreal? That was one that I thought of because of proximity. And Mexico City, maybe? Can we throw Mexico City in?
We can. Mexico City, Montreal. Okay, I've been to Montreal. That race is just phenomenal. Like, I had so much fun. I'm hopefully going back this year. I've never been to the Mexico City race for Formula One. I've been for Formula E. And even for that, like, a way smaller series, the fans turn up. So it's a great vibe. And you will have so much fun and buy so many like great things to eat for no money at all.
Okay, we're gonna go Hungary number one, Montreal number two, Mexico City potential number three. Got it.
Yeah, I think that's good.
We have another. This is very much of the ilk of our viewership here. How would you tinker with the sprint format in a way that upsets the most people possible?
Ooh.
So what's the absolute worst race weekend schedule that we can come up with that seems plausible? Like maybe F1 would do this.
I think like so many people keep calling for the reverse grid where you have like it goes backwards.
Oh, I love this idea. Yes.
And everyone's like, that would make it so much more interesting. But I know for a goddamn fact, as soon as you do that, everyone's going to lose their minds and no one is going to be happy with it. So I honestly think they should do that. I know like you can't pass on most of these circuits. You're just going to be stuck behind slow drivers. Your favorite driver is going to hit somebody and crash out. You're going to like, I'm fully confident that if Formula One did this one time, everyone would be so mad about it that they could never do it again. So that's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say the reverse.
That's
grid
a great
for the spring.
Yeah. I think they should do a reverse grid, but not announce it until after the grid is set. So like, say we do like, you know, 12 sprint races next year, cause we have to have more, but then Formula One tells us before the season, four of these will be reverse grid. And then no one knows. Mm-hmm. And that way you can't tank either. Ooh, I think that that's would piss one. Off everyone. Christian
There's
Horner
also
would be so upset.
Oh, I know. There's a sprint car series here in the United States called the High Low series. And they like, the pole sitter can like roll a dice and then whatever number it comes up, it's like if you want to start from like sixth place, you'll get I think it's like $10,000 or something for every place you make up if you think you can win the race. I think that would be a great thing for the sprint race too. Like Max Verstappen, you can start from 10th even though you qualified on pole. But if you go forward, you'll like get more money or something. So I like that would be fun. It's a very like Americana way to go about it. But like, I think it'd be great.
You get health care if you pass someone in front of you.
Exactly. This is the Dr. Pepper challenge, right? Like
this is the Dr. Pepper challenge.
Yeah. I heard another
Those are suggestion. Terrible ideas. I love them.
Yeah. Is that one way? Can we adopt the Formula E solution? For that, where we start in reverse order and have to switch drivers.
Oh, they haven't done the driver switch thing in a while, but I personally think that they should bring it back for Formula One. Like, I think the driver should have to switch out and then give it over to the reserve driver. That would be fun.
That's what I want in order to emphasize exactly how good or how bad each teammate is. Like right now, Aston, like they'll be great. It'll be awesome. They'll finish
Absolutely.
First.
Absolutely.
I'm not as certain about other teams, Red Bull in particular.
Yeah, I don't think Red Bull could do it. I don't think they'd be able to handle it, and that would be beautiful.
Okay, let's do a semi-serious question from a listener. Over under 5.5 races this year won by someone besides Verstappen or Perez?
Not going to happen.
I'll take the under.
I'll take the under.
Yeah. I'll take the under, and it's 5.
Yeah.
At this point, it's just there's no evidence. There's absolutely no like,
yeah,
we need both Red Bulls to crash out for them to even consider multiple podium spots not belonging to them at this point.
I'm pretty sure like three races, all those three are going to be disaster for Red Bull. And that's the only reason someone actually wins. That's not one of them.
If Verstappen is sad and retires halfway through the season, I have the right to change my answer.
Correct.
if he goes on sad sabbatical for whatever reason.
I mean, I read a really great thread by @_allthatglitz Sarah on Twitter, who is from Box This Lap, and she had a great detailed thread about what a good race Charles Leclerc had in Baku and how brilliant his baiting of Fernando Alonso down the stretch was. And that's all true. And yet, that's not getting him anywhere into the top two. That's just
no.
As long as he did everything possible and managed his car well and outdueled the competition and adopted a brilliant strategy and adapted to difficult in-race situations with great fluidity and made excellent decisions. And it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. So, under 5.5.
Oh, yeah.
This is Doug is saying that we've gotten three different variations, at least, of this same question. Are we ready to tackle my favorite media question of the weekend, which is, who will Martin Brundle confuse for another celebrity this weekend in Miami? Last year, it was confusing Paolo Banchero with Patrick Mahomes was his big confusion.
That's funny.
Who will this be this weekend?
I have a guess. I'm going to say, going off of last year, Paolo Banchero was a NBA draft selection, right? Who had not been drafted yet. So I'm going to go with another recently drafted professional athlete, Will Levis. And I'm going to say Martin Brundle will call him JJ Watt.
Okay. I like that.
There is no legitimate answer I could come up with for this because I only know race car, and I would be in Martin Brundle's shoes if I was on the grid trying to talk to people.
Well, so, I really hope his producer watched the NFL draft, because I'm telling you, there will be Miami Dolphins there and there will be NFL players.
There's got to be.
Well, one NFL player I know, a new NFL player, was already an F1 fan and was in attendance at Austin, and that's Bijan Robinson.
Ooh. So
I do not know who former Texas Longhorns running back and current Atlanta Falcon Bijan Robinson will be confused for, but he will confuse him for someone. Bijan Robinson is my number one vote, because I already know that he's there. Love Speed had a Lamborghini endorsement as an undergrad, which congrats on him for being a 21-year-old young man
NIL.
Who did not immediately wrap a Lamborghini around a telephone pole, which is exactly what I would have done. Yeah. The discretion and the respect for speed there, young man. Well done.
Do we know if he took it to COTA at all to race?
If Lamborghini could get him on the track, I imagine he took that up. So, yeah.
Oh, man, this is a good question. This is a deep cut. Elizabeth, you may not understand this reference, but I'll explain it to you. So Dan Levitard wore a basketball shorts, undershirt, orthopedic shoe combination to the Miami race last year. And like you
God
described,
bless him.
People there were dressed very fancily. He was dressed for the weather. So
honestly,
that
no, he showed up prepared. He knew he was going to walk around and be hot, and he was ready.
Exactly. Will his outfit be better or worse than what he wore last year? I think he's going to accidentally wear something worse to overcompensate for last year and show up in like a three-piece suit and then get roasted for that, and like literally roast in the sun. So
that's hilarious. Yeah, that no, that's I love
fire
that.
Suit. Full
fire suit. Ooh, that would be a fun Martin Brundle accidental. I think that's American podcast host Pat McAfee. No, it's Dan Levitard. Is that Dan Patrick? No, it's not.
He would confuse him for he probably confused him for a retired lineman, because if you don't know, Dan Levitard got some size on him. That's a big man.
He is lineman size. That's true.
Yeah. So, I have an answer. This is a good Miami specific question. This is from at Weirwood 522. Considering it looks like it might rain on Sunday, is the fake marina built for real water?
Yes. Miami's not built for real water, so no.
No.
No. Will Swamp Boy Logie Sarge, I've never heard Logan Sargent referred to as Logie Sarge, congratulations on innovation, sir, win Best Florida Man? Well, he's the only real Florida man in there, so wherever he finishes, you're on top, sir. Logan Sargent, by the way, I'll point out for Dade County purists, is from Fort Lauderdale, not from Dade County. He is Broward. So
Broward baby.
Yeah, Broward baby.
I think they should, with NASCAR, when they do the New England race, they give the winner a live lobster. And I think that Logan Sargent, for winning Best Florida Man, should receive a live alligator.
Ooh, I like that. I was going to say maybe a stone crab, but I think stone crab season's officially closed as of May 1st. So I think alligator is a good bet. We could certainly find one. So while we're on the topic of Logan Sargent, Elizabeth, since you were writing about F1 trying to capitalize on American fandom, has there been any sort of Logan Sargent effect? Does anyone, he's on Williams, so he's obviously not a front runner. I don't know if I think he might have not scored any points yet this season, but I need to double check. Has there been any sort of fleeing of American fans to Team Williams now to support our Broward County Logie Sarge?
I haven't really seen anything, which I think is kind of sad. The last time we had an American was in 2015 with Alexander Rossi, and they really, really pushed him. Like, they marketed that boy so hard. He was there, did so many autograph signings and stuff at the U.S. Grand Prix, even though it was like hurricane weather, pouring rain. He was out there with his little Sharpie doing it. I have not seen the same kind of thing from Logan Sargeant. I think part of that is just like he wasn't really a big thing that people were watching. Everyone was kind of had their eyes on Colton Herta instead. So it was kind of disappointing that like everyone researched Colton Herta. They were like, we know this guy. He can possibly make it to IndyCar, or sorry, not from from IndyCar to F1. We'll know everything about him. And then Logan Sargeant just kind of like slipped in there, and it was like, we don't know who this guy is. We don't have an investment in him. And also he's on Williams. So like, what does it matter?
Piggybacking off of that to talk about the fact that now there's a third race in the United States this year, what has the Miami experience so far meant for what fans should expect in Las Vegas, which is going to be another street circuit and another probably insanely expensive event for fans to attend?
I was going to say, don't expect to see anything. Don't expect to get away from there without spending a whole lot of money. The Las Vegas situation blows my mind. The general admission area is you're paying $500 to watch on a television, not even see the track. The different grandstand section areas are cut off from each other, so you can only go to one part. You can't walk the whole track, which... like, I have to do that when I'm at a new circuit. I have to go around the whole thing. So that's kind of disappointing. If you have paid for a ticket to Vegas, there's a good chance that you're not actually going there to watch the race. You're going there to be seen at the racetrack, which is a totally different vibe. I think the race is going to be fun to watch at home on my couch, because seeing the cars race down the strip is going to be sick. But I don't think anyone who actually goes is going to be there and enjoy the fact that a race is happening. I think they're just going to enjoy the fact that like they're rich people and they have a lot of alcohol and money to just throw around.
Yeah. Just to give you some perspective on that, the rate for what I saw was general admission, a minimum of 4-night stay at a Caesars grade hotel in the area was starting at a basic suite for $14,000. So that's 2 tickets, 4 nights. 14 grand as a start. Prices may dive before if demand slackens for any of this. That has not been the indication thus far. No. They just started paving this weekend for the race coming up in the fall. And I don't really know how any of this is made. One little thing. What if you're already there? What if you just booked your Vegas trip a long time ago and you're already there and you just want to hang out in the casinos and suddenly an F1 race just breaks out in the middle of it? There's going to be, you say, oh, Spencer, that could not happen. Surely nobody could show up in Vegas that weekend and not know there was an F1 race. I point you to people who decide to go to Vegas. That I guarantee you half the people do not know this is inbound.
My mom is doing a trip to Vegas over the summer, and she was like, wait, there's a Formula One race in Vegas. I just heard about this. Am I going to be there at the same time? Because I don't want to be there at the same time. I was like, no, mama, you're going to be fine.
Oh, it is 100% reminiscent of the people who were in Nashville during the NFL draft that were like, why are all these damn NFL fans in jerseys on the strip? I'm trying to enjoy my bachelorette party bar crawl. Damn it.
I'm just trying to go to Kid Rocks. Yeah, that's just, you joke. There's going to be, if somebody ends up on the track at the end of the race in Vegas, one, we hope nothing bad happens. But two, I guarantee you, they will have just wandered onto the track with a yard long beer, wanting to know how they can get back to the Flamingo. Elizabeth, projections forward, who do you see in Miami benefiting from the city's unique mixture of gravel that doesn't stick to the track or asphalt that does not stick to the track, high lateral
they resurface speed, they and... resurface Spencer.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure okay. this is how I know Jessica's lived in Miami long enough, is that she's playing along with the yeah sure everything will be fine.
If only they would resurface the street that I live on as well, because I fuck up my car every day when I'm driving on it. Yes, anyways.
Tell us who you see benefiting from the second GP setup, and also plug everything you've got going on.
Oh God. Well, I'll start with my predictions. I think it's going to be Red Bull. I'm not getting spicy with my picks. I think it'll be Checo. I'll go that far. I'll say Max is going to have an issue with something or other. His balance is going to be off again, and it's just going to throw him out for a loop, and Checo will be there. But it's going to be a Red Bull. You hate to see it. You kind of do. That's as spicy as I'm going to get. As far as plugging things, just follow me on Twitter, at @Eliz_Blackstock. I do 1,005 things, and you will find them all on Twitter, because otherwise you will be here for an hour as I list everything else out.
Well, thank you for joining us. She's Elizabeth Blackstock, a senior motorsport editor at Jalapnik and co-author of Racing with Rich Energy, How a Rogue Sponsor Took Formula One for a Ride. We appreciate your insight, expertise. Thank you for interviewing unhappy Miami Grand Prix fans so we don't have to. And hopefully we'll have you back soon. This was great.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a high honor.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text Thin to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text Thin to 200-300. That's Thin to 200-300. Thin to 200-300.